Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. I'm Grant Reher. My guest today is Khalid Bey, the Democratic Party candidate in this November's election for Syracuse City Mayor. Mr. Bey is currently a city councilor at large, the president pro tem of the chamber, and chair of the Economic Development, Downtown, and Metropolitan Planning Committee. Khalid, welcome back to the program. And first of all, congratulations on your victory in the primary.
Thanks, Grant. I appreciate you having me. And it's exciting right now, for sure.
Well, we're really happy that you made the time. So let me start with a very similar question that I started with in the primary debate that you had with your opponent in that race. And that is just, if you could very, very briefly, what's the case for the city's citizens to make a change in the mayor's office after 4 years of Ben Walsh?
You know, to sum it up to sum up many things I've said before, the city is just not performing well. You know, there's a lot that's wrong right now, whether we're talking about, high unemployment, whether we're talking about obviously the increase in crime and violence, the lack of safety and the feeling of discomfort that many people experience in their home and in their neighborhoods, the issues with police community relations, all of these things, even you see internally, the conflict that's happening in the police department. There's so much that I think needs to be resolved. It doesn't appear that this administration is succeeding in that respect. So I think at the crux of it all, when you really look at, the things I've mentioned, plus I think a lackluster performance with absentee landlordism, there's a lot to be corrected in the city. And I simply put it this way, Grant, if the city was performing well, if these things were not issues in the way that they are right now, I would very likely not be running, And so the fact that we're not performing well is certainly a need for change.
Well, I want to get into a couple of those things that you mentioned. Let me though move to one thing you didn't, and I wanted to ask about, which is COVID. And that is still, I think, one of the most pressing issues that the country is facing. And if I could just take a couple seconds here at the beginning of this question, I've actually been struck, and not in a good way, by the gaps that I am seeing in the take up of the vaccine over time. And I don't think it's any really a problem any longer of supply and access. It's one of compliance and participation by the citizens. And I'm just wondering, do you think that there are things that the city itself can do to increase its vaccination rate, either through positive incentives or more punitive kinds of things? I mean, New York City, for example, just announced that they're going to pay people who haven't gotten the vaccine yet to get the vaccine. So do you have any thoughts about raising our participation rates?
It's tough. My position is always to communicate to persons the importance of talking to their respective physicians to make their decisions for themselves. I think it's a dangerous slope, when we talk about mandates on something that is still experimental. Medical professionals, in the field, certainly even my medical professionals, those who assist me, state the same. And so it's very tough to put mandates on something that even the medical profession has uncertainty about. That aside, there's still, I think, the responsibility of all of us to tell people to be respectful of the distance between themselves and others. Again, to give consideration to taking the vaccine and talking to their medical support in that respect, but doing what's right for them and for their families is ultimately what I believe we do. But I know that there are concerns, and I knew of, to be quite frank, a couple of people who had the vaccine and still contracted COVID. I didn't mention it before because I didn't think it was good to mention, but it's kind of out there now, so I don't feel like I'm saying anything that the media is not already reporting. So that creates an additional amount of uncertainty, I believe, for people in terms of its effectiveness. But in the end, it is my hope that it proves to be, or at least at some point proves to be, very effective, and we ultimately get control over the spread of COVID.
Well, let me ask you two questions that come out of that. The first one, and I just want to tell you, I'm gonna ask this same question to all of the candidates that I'm interviewing this fall, but you're the first, so you'll be the first to have this question. But have you been vaccinated?
No.
You have not. Okay. And then I want to also push you on what you said about some people with a vaccine still contracting COVID. The numbers that I've seen on this, comparing unvaccinated to vaccinated people, the difference is enormous. I mean, we're talking about something like 100 to 1, sometimes exceeding 100 to 1. If you just look at those numbers, comparing those who have had the vaccine to those who haven't, who's coming into the hospitals, who's testing positive. So I want to ask you to explain that a little bit further, because you do have these breakthrough infections, but they're really dwarfed by those who haven't had the vaccine.
Well, I'm not a medical professional, so I really can't elaborate on what the differences are or why they exist. I can only speak to the people that I just mentioned that I know had the vaccine and still contracted COVID. That is a fact. I can't say why or why not. As it relates to myself, obviously I make the argument that my personal health is my personal business. Mm-hmm. And my decisions for me is for me. But I still, when people ask me, I tell them they have to talk to the medical professionals. They have to make their decision for them. One thing I will not do is tell somebody not to take it. That wouldn't be intelligent. But my issue is everybody's body reacts different to things. And speaking for myself personally, my body doesn't respond well to prescription drugs and the like. And so it's not recommended by my medical professional that I don't take any prescription drugs, because I've had adverse responses to them. And so, but that's my issue. It is not the issue of every person. And until I know a specific thing, there's been, speaking for me, Grant.
Sure.
There are certain studies that have a certain outcome. I won't mention it here because, again, my intent is not to deter anybody. But if those potential outcomes are true, then it's not unlikely that the vaccine could have an adverse effect on me as well. And so unless that is determined, that is the reason for why I have not taken the vaccine.
Okay, I appreciate you being willing to talk about that in your own situation so frankly. You're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with the Democratic Party candidate for mayor of the city of Syracuse, City Councilor Khalid Bey. So I want to return now to something you did mention at the beginning, which was the relations between the police and the community and the city. And during the primary, I thought that you spoke very powerfully about the issue of the police's engagement with minority populations in the city. So do you have specific thoughts about initiatives that you would lead as mayor to improve the relations between the police and communities of color and poor communities in the city?
Yeah, I would like to think that I had some influence on the establishment of the Police Athletic League recently. I've talked about it. I may have mentioned before, even during a minor administration, an idea of police officers getting involved in the city, taking over youth football. I think, one easy way to build relationships between not just the kids and police officers, but their parents, is to get those officers that are willing to be involved as coaches and the like. It not only creates the opportunity and for them to interact and become more familiar, but it increases safety, in those environments where we had some unfortunate incidents in the past, not too many, fortunately, but unfortunate nevertheless. On top of that, I always go back to community police and police officers walking the beat. I talked to a former police chief fairly recently who was very instrumental in implementing, beat walking years in the past. And he talked about the successes of that type of effort and what it did to improve community police relations. I think we can look back at that kind of effort and implement that here. And it goes a long way to build relationships. Last thing I'll say in that respect I'll stick to what I've always said, proximity matters. If I don't experience you, if I don't get to engage you in a way that is, let's say, normal, right? I'm not coming because of a call. I'm not responding because of something I've seen, but it's just two human beings talking and interacting as they pass by. If I don't get that opportunity, then the opportunity for a relationship does not exist.
Do you think that you being African-American gives you an advantage in the city to be a force for improving the relations? Does that give you a more powerful voice, a more effective voice in trying to change?
Absolutely. You know, a person can never know by being told. And a lot of people, with all due respect, who have a perception of the African-American experience in America can never really qualify what they may think they know. You know, so to have been in the position where I didn't have, where I may have had a unfortunate encounter with a law enforcement officer over the time, over the course of my life, knowing what that's like, that I have, in that respect, to have a very intimate, obviously, understanding of the many things that people go through in those situations. Fortunately, it's not all the time, it's not with every encounter, but it only takes one to really throw a person off course. And so I certainly have a unique perspective that the other two candidates can't have. And I think that provides me an added understanding of how to maybe improve the condition and the relationships between the police, particularly in the African-American and Latino communities.
You also mentioned crime going up, and it's true. Crime has risen recently in cities all across America. And it's the central theme, perhaps maybe the only big theme of Janet Berman's candidacy. At least that was the one that she emphasized over and over again in the primary debate that I hosted for the Republican side with her. Do you have any specific ideas about steps that can be taken to lower crime, especially violent crime in the city, other than the ones that you just described about community policing and so on?
I don't know that there are other ways to deter crime except to create a presence, but not an occupation type of presence, but more of a neighborhood relation or familiarity type of presence, if that makes sense. You know, naturally, if there are squad cars on the street, for example, or police officers on the sidewalk, there's a very slim chance that you'll have shots fired or somebody would commit a crime where the police could see them. Equally important is the improvement of relations that make people comfortable enough to speak to police officers. Right now, that type of opportunity does not exist. So again, I believe of what I stated is a key way for deterring crime and ultimately reducing the amount of crime we're witnessing in our neighborhoods today.
I'm thinking that going back to what you said just a few minutes ago about the advantage being African-American gives you in this regard, that if you're out there encouraging people to come forward with information that they may have, that may carry a little more weight than perhaps some of the other leaders in the city saying the same things.
I think even more so, the approach to ideas for police training is where I would have an advantage as well. Certainly, I could talk to people within my community, but one thing I've learned, obviously being from a community that has been marginalized, is oftentimes we need to see something in order for us to qualify it as real, right? And so people may need to see a change in how the police approach them and the like to determine that there's real opportunity for change. I think it comes into training. It starts in the academy. It starts with training that's not a part of the us versus them culture. I think I bring a unique perspective there, and hopefully I get the opportunity to demonstrate that.
You're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. I'm Grant Reher, and I'm talking with City Councilor Khalid Bey. He's the Democratic Party nominee in this November's election for Syracuse City Mayor. So here's something else that we spoke about in the primary, but it's a huge issue as well. It's the tearing down of I-81 and the redevelopment of its on-the-ground footprint in the East Adams neighborhood of the city. These are huge issues facing the city and its future. It's been called, you know, a once in a generation chance to really get a development issue right and really sort of bring the city forward. And the next mayor, I think, is going to be the one who's managing that process for the city more than anybody else. So what would be the key elements of your focus in that process?
The key element would be to ensure that the community grid does what it has the potential to do. While there's a lot of argument about what should be there, even still by persons who are not in support of the grid, I think the number one issue is ensuring that people who live adjacent to the 81 Viaduct are not displaced. If there is a need for persons to temporarily move, they have to have a legitimate opportunity to move back. We have to be aware, though, that oftentimes when people move, they won't move again. You know, and so I think we have to be careful in that respect to ensure that people are cared for. We got to remember we're in the people business first. Also, I think there's a bit of a missed opportunity right now in terms of jobs. While there's a lot of talk about jobs, I always make the argument that we have a great opportunity for employment connected to infrastructure improvement. But there's been no real workforce development for infrastructure improvement, which would change not only our condition in terms of infrastructure, but also the lives of many people with gainful employment. And so I think what we'll end up having going forward is at best some temporary labor opportunities. So I think the boat was missed there, unfortunately, by those involved. But again, the number one thing for me is making sure people have opportunities to stay in their neighborhoods and improve their condition, certainly protect them from the debris that will be the result of tearing down the viaduct. But this last thing, taking advantage of the opportunity, reconfiguring the roles and ensuring that those mom and pops that exist or could exist get access or at least have the opportunity of those many driving through our city to stop by, spend money. I think it has a greater potential for economic impact in that respect.
Well, in terms of what is going to be rebuilt in the footprint there, assuming it is a community grid, that looks like it's pretty set now. There is already an organization that's kind of leading that, Blueprint 15, and it's being driven by a nonprofit agency in the area, the Allen Foundation, as well as the mayor's office and the housing authority. Is there anything regarding that process right now with community dialogue or discussing what the options are that's getting less attention than you would like to see it get?
Yes, obviously Blueprint 15 is dealing with the Housing Authority property, Central Village,
right,
Homes, McKinney Manor, not the property under the viaduct specifically, but even still what they're looking to develop, which to be quite frank, I'm not necessarily clear on, is ideally to improve the community. In terms of what's not receiving an adequate amount of focus is the very thing that I mentioned, and that is the potential displacement of people. I told the mayor and the deputy mayor when this topic first arose, even before Blueprint had a name, that this could not be a repeat of the 15th Ward. You know, and right now, it's starting to look that way, to be quite frank. I'm concerned about efforts to gentrify while telling people one thing, telling people that they'll have an opportunity to live there, that they'll be able to stay in their neighborhood. I'm concerned about the fact that that's not necessarily true. And so there's not enough engagement. There's still a number of people who live in the area who are clueless to what in fact is going to happen. And that's my biggest concern right now.
If you just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. And my guest is Democratic Syracuse mayoral candidate, City Councilor Khalid Bey. So I've got some politics questions for you now, the last part of the interview. Let me start with this one. I think one of the keys to Ben Walsh's election 4 years ago was his ability, and you correct me if you think I'm wrong about this because you're a closer observer of this than I am, but I think one of the keys to his election 4 years ago was his ability to get the early support of political leaders in the city's African-American community who were Democrats. I think they got behind him relatively early. And I don't think he wins without that support. And it would seem that your candidacy as a Democrat is going to complicate that strategy. for him. Have you, first of all, is my sense of that coalition right, do you think, 4 years ago?
I think that is correct. I think, you know, the effort on the part of some in the African-American community to galvanize support for him. I think also, obviously, some elected officials going public for him. But on top of that, it was really the disconnect of the previous administration that I think, you know, business was behind him. There were so many people behind him, you know, because, you know, and I made the comment before, Grant, I thought he was the right person in retrospect for the moment. But my argument is that that moment has passed. I don't believe he's taken advantage of that moment. And so that's what has us here, you know, in the situation today.
So have you had conversations with some of those local African-American Democrats about who they're going to support this time around and making your case to them?
Yeah, certainly we're making our case. We'll continue to make our case. You know, obviously he'll still have some support, you know, across communities, I believe. We're looking to, you know, compete with that, obviously, you know, galvanize support in the African-American and Latino communities and others, but also other communities around the city. I think I have a respectable amount of support of elected officials, and I think that'll come to the fore soon. So I think we're in a good position to maybe change the dynamics. It certainly won't be like his first election, and it's just a matter of whether what the turnout is, or the turnout being more in my favor than his.
Mm. Do you have any strategies for energizing turnout? Because it's going to be one of the first sort of post-COVID elections here, and there's going to be a lot of scrutiny on the counting given recent, who knows how this is going to play out in the weeks just leading up to the election.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, obviously I won't give away any trade secrets. what I will say is, you know, my intent is to run a respectable campaign. I hope to win on the merits, nothing else. I'm not looking for any entitlement or anything in that respect. I hope that my record, you know, speaks for itself. History has value for a reason. And I'm hoping that people don't ignore the history that I have on the council and as a city representative. But, you know, again, I think we certainly have a plan going forward. We're in the process of organizing and executing as we speak. But I'm looking forward to getting out there and making my case to the people.
There is a sizable difference between you and the incumbent mayor regarding money, fundraising, and it's in the mayor's favor. Any strategies there to counter that? What, at least based on the last report I saw in the newspaper, was a pretty big difference coming out of the primary.
Yeah. You know, certainly we won't catch the amount. He started before this campaign with $277,000, I believe. So he had quite the advantage on all of us who are challenging him for the seat. We have a respect. We know the amount that we have to raise in order to be competitive in that respect. We don't think we'll have a problem doing that, and maybe even more. But again, I always make the argument, I'm always concerned about the treatment of the subject with all due respect by media. It's almost suggestive of who people should vote for because somebody raised more money. It doesn't speak to issues. And then the amount of money you raise doesn't automatically qualify you as a respectable or an effective executive. And so, you know, this is why I make the argument that the money doesn't vote, people do. You know, and at the end of the day, you know, I hope that people choose on the merits, you know, and he has to make a better case to those voters than I do.
So you mentioned something at the outset, and we've got about 3 minutes or so left, so I want to return to it, about absentee landlords and the city not doing a good enough job regarding that. In a couple minutes or so, and then I want to try to squeeze one last question, and if I could, explain what you mean there and what you would be doing differently.
We've had issues with absentee landlordism for years, obviously decades. There's been many efforts by organizations in the past, from Syracuse United Neighbors, you know, up to the Southeast University neighborhood. When Joe Nicoletti was on the council, he pushed to create the Board of Administrative Adjudication to deal with violations a little faster. This administration has not used that effectively. And so people, unfortunately, are still suffering. Sorry about that.
That's okay. It's a Zoom issue. We'll just put it down to that. Keep going.
People are unfortunately still suffering because that tool has not been used effectively. You know, us as legislators, we put tools in place and people are still complaining about it because of lack of enforcement. So, when you look at whether you're talking about Skyline, the increasing issue with Ballantyne Apartments now, that I think there's just a slow response to. We have to do much better to improve the living conditions of our citizens.
So I'm going to be talking to Mayor Walsh in a couple of weeks. Is there one question that you would like me to ask him? And I'll reference you and say, you know, that I spoke with you. What would you like me to ask? And a genuine question, not a criticism with a question mark at the end of it.
I don't know that I have a genuine question for him, and you know, not necessarily because, well, I'll ask this.
Okay.
You know, the Southside campus for a new economy, with all due respect, I think has fallen short. The ideas that were to make up that program all included what would have been municipally owned buildings. And so how do you qualify that as and why do you qualify it as a Southside program with the Tech Garden included in that as a project when the Tech Garden is not on the Southside? I think it was very misleading more of an idea than it was an actionable item. And so I would need him to explain that one.
All right. I will ask him that. And then looking ahead to the fall, I hope to have all of the candidates on the program for a debate. But for now, that was Khalid Bey. He's the Democratic candidate running for Syracuse City Mayor, and he is a councilor at large. And as I just said, in upcoming programs, I plan to have the other candidates vying for the Syracuse City Mayor and then a debate later on. But Councilor Bey, I want to thank you very much for making the time to speak with me. It's always interesting to speak with you.
I appreciate it, Ben. I always look forward to it.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, conversations in the public interest.
Conversations. Conversations in the Public Interest is hosted and produced by Grant Reher and edited by Mark Lepelnier. The Campbell Conversations is a joint production of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University and WRVO Public Media. To learn more about the program and to hear previous interviews, visit wrvo.org/Campbell Conversations.